Welcome to Behind the Headlines, the Friday morning Utah News Roundup from the Salt Lake Tribune and KCPW. I'm Roger McDonough. Today on the show, a Utah lawmaker pursues impeaching Attorney General Sean Reyes. Sandy Democratic Representative Andrew Stoddard said that his filing was over Reyes's efforts challenging the outcome of the 2020 presidential election and in response to the AG's ties to the Republican Attorneys General Association. More on that in a moment. And speaking of impeachment, Utah's U.S. senators are split on the upcoming Senate trial of former President Donald Trump. However, Senators Mike Lee and Mitt Romney are far more united when it comes to trying to curb national monument designations in Utah. Plus, the latest from the state legislature, including a bill to let Utahns carry a concealed firearm without a permit, and another that would require women to seek an women who seek an abortion in Utah to listen to heartbeat audio and see images of the procedure. On the phone for this discussion, we have Salt Lake Tribune government reporter Lee Davidson. Good morning, Lee. Welcome.
Good morning.
Government reporter Bethany Rogers is with us as well. Welcome, Bethany.
Thank you.
And editorial page editor and columnist George Pyle. Hi, George. Good morning.
Good morning.
And listeners, you can add your questions or comments about the stories that we are discussing by tweeting to @KCPW or calling 801-355-8255. That's 801-355-TALK. Impeachment is a major topic on the national stage, and we'll get to that. But Bethany Rogers, it's also a topic, if not a major topic, but a topic locally. And that is because a Democratic member of the Utah House wants to impeach Republican Utah Attorney General Sean Reyes. I gave just the briefest sketch on this in the introduction there. But why does this representative, Representative Andrew Stoddard, say that he is pursuing this impeachment?
He is taking Attorney General Sean Reyes to task over his conduct related to the presidential election. So he has objected to the way that Attorney General Reyes has participated in post-election challenges, has sort of contributed to some of the skepticism around the election, you know, had gone to Nevada to help the Trump campaign investigate, you know, allegations of fraud that, you know, there never ended up being any evidence of this such widespread fraud. And then also, you know, there have been questions asked about the Attorney General's ties to this Republican Attorney General's Association, which sent out a robocall in advance of the January 6th rally down in D.C. that ended with the storming of the Capitol and the violence that ensued. You know, Attorney General Reyes has, along with several other Republican attorneys general, said that they had nothing to do with that robocall, and it was a staff-level incident. Representative Stoddard is basically saying, we don't know enough about this situation. We don't know enough about the association's actions here. And he wasn't necessarily saying he thinks that Sean Reyes should be removed from office, but he is saying that we need to know more and that the only real available avenue for investigating some of these things and getting to the bottom of the questions that he has is to launch an impeachment investigation where, you know, he can sort of delve into these matters and bring some of the questions to light.
Okay. And so the reason there is kind of twofold, as you said, challenging the outcome of the election, the presidential election and the American democratic process, and then his involvement in that group. And you mentioned the just on the first part of that, the, you know, Sean Reyes traveling to Nevada to work with Trump lawyers in their election challenge in that state. And that didn't amount. I mean, you pointed out the fact that there hasn't been evidence, you know, of substantial election fraud in the country. But can you tell us what happened with that Nevada work that Attorney General Reyes did?
Yeah, I mean, it basically didn't go anywhere. I mean, Attorney General Reyes visited there over the weekend. He said he was taking some personal, you know, time off in order to go out there. And he ended up claiming that he saw some things that troubled him. And the But, you know, that never panned out. There was never any evidence brought to light with that. And Nevada's attorney general actually got kind of upset and basically told Sean Reyes to mind his own business and to stay out of another state's elections.
There was also, Bethany, this... And I don't know if Representative Stoddard mentions this, but there was the attorney general signing Utah onto the lawsuit in Texas that, or well, from Texas, that was challenging the outcome of the electoral college vote. What happened there? How is that part of also Representative Stoddard's concerns about challenging the outcome of the election?
Yeah, it is. And, you know, one of the things that Representative Stoddard says in his statements about his decision to file the impeachment is that, you know, part of his concern is over what he calls Reyes's regular failure to represent his client, the state. And he was concerned about the way that Attorney General Reyes embroiled the state in, or tried to embroil the state in this this election challenge brought by the Texas Attorney General. Sean Reyes even went so far as to try to join the lawsuit, which was ultimately, you know, really tossed out without much consideration at all by the Supreme Court. So, yeah, that was a concern for Representative Stoddard. Even Governor Gary Herbert, who was governor at the time that this happened in November, and then Lieutenant Governor Cox, who's now become governor, you know, two extremely high-profile Republicans in the state, they were concerned about why Attorney General Reyes chose to, you know, commit state resources, however small, to an election challenge such as this.
Yeah, they issued a pretty serious rebuke, as I recall, and called it a waste of taxpayer money. So we've mentioned the part of this that has to do with the challenges to the election, and you briefly touched on the other reason that Stoddard is seeking or trying to open this impeachment, and that kind of ties to the reason that President Donald Trump was himself impeached a week before he left office. It has to do with the storming of the U.S. Capitol and the actions of this national group, or an arm of this national group that Reyes is involved in, the Republican Attorney General's Association. Can you explain that part of this story? What happened with those robocalls? What was the Attorney General's, you know, if any, involvement there?
So the Republican Attorneys General Association has sort of a policy wing. It's called the Rule of Law Defense Fund. It's a 501c4. And this group sent out a robocall on the day before the January 6th rally, basically calling on, it says, patriots like you to join us to continue to fight for the integrity of elections. It didn't, tell people to, you know, storm into the Capitol. It didn't advocate violence, but it did raise concerns with people in, you know, light of what happened a day later. After the January 6th events, the attorneys general who are involved in this association basically distanced themselves from all involvement in sending out the robocall, you know, denounced the violence and said that the defense fund staff was responsible for sending out the robocall. And in the aftermath of all that, the group's executive director has even resigned just over the controversy.
Okay.
Sean Reyes is among the attorneys general who has said that he had nothing to do with the robocall and has also condemned the violence. His connection is a little bit stronger to the fund than some other attorneys general. He was just recently the chairman of the fund, but despite that, he says he has nothing to do with this robocall.
Is there, I guess the process, you know what, actually, before we get to the process, and you said that this is about opening up an investigation for Representative Stoddard more than it is about necessarily, trying to remove the attorney general from his office. But, you know, just in terms of Representative Stoddard and his motivations, can you talk about who he is? He's a relatively new member of the Utah House of Representatives, right?
Yeah, he is, and he has he's a Democrat from Murray, and he's actually, you know, has his own relationship with all. He's a prosecutor from Murray City, so he's himself a law enforcement official.
Okay, and then Republican leadership in the legislature, how are they responding to this? You mentioned the, you know, the earlier rebuke of, and this is not the legislature, but the earlier rebuke of then Governor Herbert and then Lieutenant Governor Spencer Cox, who is now governor. How is our new governor responding to the call for impeachment? How are Republicans in the state legislature responding to Stoddard's measure?
Yeah, they've all said that they don't think that this is a worthwhile use of time. That's kind of the general message from the governor all the way down to, you know, members of the legislature in the Republican caucus. House Speaker Brad Wilson responded to the proposal basically by saying that he hasn't seen any evidence that the attorney general has done anything worthy of impeachment, and he doesn't think that it's worth valuable time to debate the issue. So, I mean, he's in charge of where bills and proposals go in the Utah House, and his, you know, stance on that basically means that there is no chance for this proposal to move forward.
Okay. And then I guess have the governor and the new lieutenant governor weighed in on this? I mean, when Governor Cox was the lieutenant governor, he was in charge of elections. He was an elections official, and he has been pretty adamant that they're, you know, in rejecting the claims by the president, former president. Wow, there's a lot of formers here. President Donald Trump, that there was voter fraud. Attorney General Reyes was engaged in trying to show that there was or you know, uphold the idea of voter fraud. Has Cox responded to the calls for impeachment?
I did see a quote from him that basically said that that he didn't think that this was worth moving forward with.
Okay. I'm going to remind listeners to join this conversation, an impeachment for the attorney general. Obviously, it sounds like this isn't going anywhere, but your thoughts, you can weigh in by tweeting to us. Our handle is at KCPW or call 801-355-8255. George Pyle, Salt Lake Tribune editorial page editor and columnist. An effort to, I guess, draw attention, but that doesn't seem to be going anywhere because, the Democrats don't have control in the Utah legislature.
Yeah, this is another case where the fact that Sean Reyes is a Republican and the Republicans have a supermajority in the legislature means that it doesn't matter whether Representative Stoddard's call is legitimate or not. It's not going anywhere, which is kind of too bad. The Utah Constitution is a little more friendly to impeachment because the federal constitution says executive officers can be impeached for high crimes and misdemeanors. The Utah Constitution says high crimes, misdemeanors, and malfeasance in office, which is a little bit of a lower bar. If it said becoming a thorough embarrassment to the state of Utah, then this would be a slam dunk, but it doesn't say that. There have been a lot of people, Republicans and Democrats, who aren't comfortable with Reyes' extracurricular activities. He seems to spend more time going off suing the federal government or taking the side of the Trump administration than he does actually doing the work of the state of Utah, although when he does, nobody notices because it's just routine. But his involvement in going to Nevada and spreading the word that there might be irregularities there, even though that wasn't on the taxpayers' dime, looked bad. His joining with Texas to try and overturn election results in other states where he was using his official office to do something, although Texas wrote the brief, so it wasn't like they spent a lot of money and staff time on it. That, in my view, was worse because what he was doing, what all Republicans in this were doing, were looking around, looking at swing states, states where they thought they might be able to undermine public confidence in the election, and going after those states, saying that those states don't have the right to run their own elections if the results aren't what we want. And, you know, you can imagine the Attorney General of California taking a weekend trip to Utah because he didn't like the way our election was run. I mean, people around here would have kittens if that happened. But again, it's just this partisan tribe. tribalism that seems to be more important than any facts.
Wow. People around here would have kittens, George. You're dropping idioms that I'm not familiar with, but I love it. Bethany Rogers, is there anything else that we need to know from this story? It sounds like, again, because Speaker Wilson, you know, won't prioritize this bill, it's not going anywhere. Is that the end of the story? Stoddard tries and it doesn't go anywhere?
Yeah, I think it is. I mean, I would note that Reyes released a lengthy statement in response to this, in which he again said that he had nothing to do with the January 6th Capitol attacks, and defended his move to join the lawsuit by saying that, you know, it's his job as Attorney General to defend state election laws, and he saw joining the lawsuit as part of that.
As part of defending election laws.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Well, we will leave it there. We're going to take a first break in the show, and we will definitely come back to the legislative session in just a little bit. But for now, I'll say thank you, Bethany Rogers, and stay with us. We'll come back for the topic of impeachment and the upcoming Senate trial in the impeachment of former President Donald Trump. You're listening to Behind the Headlines on KCPW and Utah Public Radio, featuring reporting from the pages of the Salt Lake Tribune. We'll be back in just a minute. Welcome back to Behind the Headlines. I'm Roger McDonough, and I'm joined by Salt Lake Tribune reporters Lee Davidson and Bethany Rogers, as well as editorial page editor George Pyle. We are live every Friday morning for this news roundup, and you can call to join this conversation. The number is 801-355-8255, or tweet to us. The handle is at KCPW. Lee Davidson, we will turn to you now. You reported on the differing perspective Utah's two senators have when it comes to the pending impeachment trial of former President Donald Trump. And Lee, maybe a reminder about the process. Trump became the first president in American history to be impeached twice. But there's more to impeachment than just, you know, the U.S. House. We've got to get to the Senate and a trial there. Can you just remind us of the steps of impeachment before we dive into this?
Well, essentially, the House, when it impeaches a president, it is like handing up an indictment. And then it sends it over to the Senate, and the Senate has a trial. This week, senators were sworn in as jurors again. But before that happened, Senator Rand Paul raised a point of order, and he contended that it's unconstitutional to impeach a president who's already out of office. And so there was a vote on it, and 45 of 50 Republicans agreed with Paul and said that it's unconstitutional. One of those who agreed with him was Mike Lee of Utah. Mike Lee put out just a kind of a short statement explaining his vote, saying that trying to impeach someone who's already out of office would be, quote, contrary to the text, structure, and historical understanding of the Constitution. Romney took the other side. He was one of five who said, no, this is constitutional. And he, in a speech to the Economic Club of Chicago, kind of delved more deeply into his thinking. And he said things like, five people died because of the riot at the Capitol. And he said, quote, there's no question but that the president incited the resurrection that occurred, and to what degree and so forth is something we're going to have to evaluate at the trial. So he's not saying he's going to vote to convict, but he says, you know, we need to move forward with the trial. He also said that if you want to see national unity, you really have to have some truth and justice and responsibility for what happened. He says people expect justice to occur. He also kind of gave some advice to some of his colleagues. He said when he was a younger politician, he on occasion justified some actions that maybe weren't quite right. And he says those have always haunted him. And so he says more recently when he became a senator and when he swore oaths in, you know, these impeachment trials, he vows to do what he thinks is right, and then he says he can live with it. He says doing what's right is what America needs right now, and not so much the partisanship that we've seen.
Those are kind of echoing comments that he made, of course, in the first impeachment. When he was the only, you know, the solitary Republican member of the U.S. Senate who voted to convict President Trump.
And he was actually the only Republican in the House. No Republicans voted to impeach him and send it over to the Senate in that first impeachment.
In all of Congress.
And historically, he became the very first person, not of a president's party, to vote to impeach that president. It's different this time. There were 10 Republicans in the House that voted to impeach the second time for Trump. None from Utah, but, you know, there were 10.
Lee, when, I guess, time frame here, you mentioned the attempt to try and stop this from going forward. It is, nevertheless, going forward, there will be some number of, as you just said, Republican senators who will you know, join with the Democratic, well, not quite majority, but I guess sort of majority in the Senate, to vote to convict. Is it enough? Will they get a conviction of the president for inciting, you know, violence at the U.S. Capitol, which is what he was impeached for that second time?
It doesn't look that way. It takes a two-thirds majority to convict. There's a 50-50 split in the Senate. Only 5 Republicans join Democrats in this sort of test vote. They need at least 17 to switch over. So it doesn't look that way now, but you never know.
I'm going to bring in George Pyle just for a moment here. George, there's other news to get to, but this is, of course, a story that has dominated the headlines for a while. I know that Democrats are now talking about trying to get through this quickly so that they can work on the agenda of the new president. But a bit of housekeeping to do first. What's your take on this, George Pyle?
Well, I think it's interesting that Lee and Romney are the two sides of the argument, mostly promoted by Republicans. The argument that we need to get past this, we need to get on, we have work to do, whether you're for the Biden agenda or against it. We have work to do and we need to get on. That's Lee's position, in addition to his, what I think is a groundless constitutional argument that they can't impeach an ex-president. They can. The Constitution specifically says that one of the reasons for impeachment is to bar people from taking office in the future, which is something that we could really use right now. Romney's argument, on the other hand, is basically no justice, no peace. We will not get past this. We will not be able to unify as a nation unless we face what happened in the last administration, specifically what happened on January 6th, and make some accounting of it. It's beginning to look like that's not going to happen, which is too bad. You would hope over the long run that the Republican Party would suffer for that, that they would lose elections. The best thing that might happen is that Donald Trump would go through with his threat to start a third party and run third party candidates, which would split the votes of people who might otherwise vote Republican and damage the Republican Party, which would be justified under these circumstances.
Okay. Lee Davidson, just, you know, Romney's going to vote to convict. Lee won't. You're the way it looks now, you know, it won't lead to a conviction. But just I want to, before we move on to other, well, let's actually talk about another point where Utah's two senators are not on the same page before we get to a point where they coincide. And this has to do, we don't have to go too far into the story, but it's worth noting that Senator Lee and Senator Romney are also not on the same page, Lee, when it comes to President Biden's cabinet picks. Can you talk about that story?
Yeah. So far, there have been 4 cabinet picks who've been confirmed. Senator Lee is one of 2 senators who's voted against all of them. There's another vote coming up on Monday, and he's already signaled that he's going to oppose that person. He put out statements giving specific reasons for each person, saying, you know, they were flawed in some ways, not saying that he's going to vote against all Biden nominees, although he's voted against all of them so far.
Right.
One of them was a 98-2 vote. He and Josh Hawley of Missouri were the only two who have opposed all of these nominations so far. Hawley kind of made headlines because after the storming of the Capitol on January 6th, he's a senator who still pushed to overturn the election that night. So he's had a lot of blowback because of that. But he and Lee are the two pushing against all these nominations. Meanwhile, Senator Romney has voted for all of those nominations so far.
Yeah, you said that Lee's office provided specific reasons for each of the cabinet nominees rather than indicating that he has this overarching philosophical reason for opposing Biden's nominees as a group. George Pyle, editorial page editor, cabinet appointments, how Senator Lee is voting. You know, he says, again, he has these specific reasons for all of these votes as opposed to just being against the president. I'll leave it there and have you comment.
Well, just the obvious one is President Trump nominated a recently retired general to be Secretary of Defense. There's a law that requires there to be a waiver before someone who's served in uniform that recently can take that civilian job. When Trump did it, Lee was for it. When Biden did it, Lee was against it. And there's no discernible reason why, except he likes what Trump does and he's against what Biden does, regardless of the merits of the situation. The others are a little bit more defensible, except especially like Janet Yellen is Treasury Secretary, where Lee is leading the Republican Party into suddenly being concerned about deficits again, which they were not at all concerned about during the Trump administration when they cut taxes and raised spending.
I'm just going to remind listeners that you can join this conversation if you've got questions or comments. Call 801-355-8255 or tweet to us. Our handle is at KCPW. Well, Lee Davidson, government reporter with the Tribune, we've been talking about the differences between Senators Romney and Lee. However, they are very much on the same page when it comes to the topic of national monuments and public lands in the state of Utah. Part of this has to do with the fact that President Biden has taken some preliminary steps to restore two Utah national monuments back to their original size after President Trump reduced them. There's a move afoot to try to prevent a president from doing this. This is something we've seen before, right?
It's been happening for decades, but Utah hasn't gotten very far ever with the idea. Of course, Bears Ears and Grand State Staircase Escalante National Monuments have been kind of battlegrounds for presidents. Two presidents created those national monuments using something called the Antiquities Act. They can just by themselves declare them a national monument. They don't need buy-in from Congress. President Trump reduced their boundaries significantly, and now it looks like President Biden will restore them. So the senators introduced a bill, which has been introduced before, that would exempt Utah from the Antiquities Act so that national monument presidents couldn't use it to create or expand or contract national monuments in Utah. Two states have been exempted from that in the past, Wyoming and Alaska. Congress exempted Wyoming after a big fight over what was then called the Jackson Hole National Monument. Most of that was made part of Grand Teton National Park. In the compromise that kind of ended that, Wyoming was exempted. Many years later, late 70s, Jimmy Carter created vast numbers of, well, a lot of national monuments in Alaska. And it's part of the compromise that solved boundary disputes between national parks and monuments up there. Alaska was exempted. When Grand Staircase was created in 1996, ever since then, Utah members of Congress have tried to get themselves exempted from the Antiquities Act. Never happened. In fact, Senator Lee, a couple of years ago, halted a very big omnibus public lands bill over this issue. He tried to get a Utah exemption in it. The Senate wouldn't do it, so Lee blocked that bill for months until, you know, it finally passed that Utah being included, but he went to that length to try to win that.
You know, you pointed out that those exemptions for Alaska and Wyoming were part of these sweeping sort of deals on conservation of public lands. Was that what that specific bill that you just described Lee objecting to was about?
No, actually, it was like hundreds of public lands bills that were thrown together into one giant bill. And Lee was thinking it was such an important thing that maybe he could get this Utah exemption in there. It didn't work out. And he ended up really ticking off a lot of other members who wanted their bill passed. And it clogged things up for a couple of months. But the other big bill passed, that the Utah inclusion to be exempt from the Antiquities Act, did not happen.
George Pyle, editorial page editor, columnist with the Tribune. There are, of course, interests, oil and gas interests in Utah, and others who will be happy with the senators for doing this, for trying to prevent. I guess that has more to do with oil and gas leasing than it does with national monuments. But the two senators are, of course, of a mind on that as well. Actually, Lee Davidson, have you covered that part of this story? There, the Biden administration is also trying to prevent leasing of public lands for oil and gas. And the two senators oppose that as well, right?
Yeah, the whole delegation and the governor also oppose that. And the two senators have introduced legislation that would seek to not allow a president to do that without congressional approval. It's not likely to go anywhere because the president could veto it. And also the Democrats control both houses. They agree on that. And I should mention that John Curtis, a House member in Utah, who's kind of a moderate, calling on the president saying, you know, I'd like to work with you on climate change issues, but you need to stop these executive orders. You need to work with Congress so that we get permanent solutions on things dealing with climate change, which is part of the justification for pausing new oil and gas.
Yeah. George Pyle, again, the Biden administration is saying, on the other hand, that action is long overdue, and scientists have been saying it for years, and that there's this link between fossil fuels, oil, gas, natural gas, you know, shale, oil, coal, all of that, and climate change. And then the question, I guess, that the Biden administration is saying is, what kind of action should we take? And part of that for them is this pause on leasing. The senators, you know, for Utah senators, some actions to address climate change, I guess, are off the table, including these executive orders. George, what's your thought here?
Well, here's an example of where we might be getting back to normal conservative, liberal, Democrat, Republican politics that aren't completely poisoned by the last 4 years. You have Democrats who want to expand national monuments, national parks, put more protections on public lands. You have Republicans who don't. Back to the future on this. I don't think there's any question that the president does have the authority to pause leases on federally owned land because that's an executive function and he's the head of the executive branch. You might change the law so that he doesn't have that power, but that's not going to happen with the political makeup of Congress. It's to me, it's an example of how Utah politicians, Utah Republicans, are still wedded to this idea that we to drill, baby, drill. And when that's just silly, there's a great number of leases out there that have been sold to oil companies that have not been drilled because it's not profitable. The price of oil is too low. It's not worth it. Part of the reason is because we've been getting all this oil and natural gas in fracking wells on private land in the Dakotas and back east and other places. There's just no demand for leasing on public land. So saying we're not going to do it anymore is no big fly into the teeth of the market or the energy needs of the country. It's just sort of acknowledging reality.
Well, George, there may not be a market for the drilling itself, but it seems like there's been a market for the leases, maybe to some folks speculating on the leasing market. I don't know.
It's speculation, and it's also the oil companies just like to show their stockholders, look at all these leases we have to drill for oil, and it makes their balance sheet look good, even though they're too smart to actually send a drilling rig out there. So, I mean, the idea that we're wedded to fossil fuels for the future, I mean, Governor Cox has been saying the same thing. He has this one Utah roadmap where he talks about the importance of rural Utah, which is good. I mean, he's from a small town and he wants to not let rural Utah be forgotten. But he's totally tied it to fossil fuels and boondoggle projects like the Lake Powell Pipeline. Nothing about how Utah could be a real mecca for sustainable energy, wind and solar that we've done very little with. The fact that our coal-fired power plants, California doesn't want power from coal-fired power plants. So that's the market speaking. And when the market speaks, Republicans are supposed to listen. But no, they still want us to drill for oil and mine for coal.
George, just on you know, we've been talking about Senator Mike Lee, Senator Mitt Romney, and they have very different perspectives on certain aspects of the way government is run. But then, I guess, you pointed it out. They're of a piece. They're on the same page when it comes to certain things having to do with the state of Utah. Is that a signal to a return or a signal of a return to a kind of, I don't know, normalcy in the Republican Party?
Well, it does sort of seem like that. Like I said, this is the old Republican issue. It would happen if there were never any such person as Donald Trump. This would still be the argument that they'd be having. You know, I think the Republicans are wrong on this. And even, you know, John Curtis is saying, well, you know, there's a lot of profitable things to be done to deal with climate change and move to clean energy. But he has to take a shot at the Biden administration along the way. But, you know, he's Republican. He's got certain boxes you have to tick.
All right. George Pyle, thank you for that. And Lee Davidson, thank you for your reporting on this. We have to take our next break in the show, and there's still more to come, including some recent measures from this year's meeting of state lawmakers. That is coming up after the break here on Behind the Headlines from the Salt Lake Tribune and KCPW. Heard around the state on Utah Public Radio. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Behind the Headlines. I'm Roger McDonough, and I am joined by the Salt Lake Tribune's Bethany Rogers, Lee Davidson, and George Pyle. The show is our Friday morning local news roundup heard on KCPW and Utah Public Radio. And if you'd like to offer your own comments or pose a question, you can join us by calling 801-355-8255, or again, you can tweet to us. At KCPW is the station's Twitter handle. Bethany Rogers, will go from the halls of the U.S. Congress to the halls of the state capitol. The legislature is in full session right now, and you have been following a lot of the action. You reported this week on some measures that actually feel like perennial proposals now, having to do with guns and abortion. Let's start with guns, concealed carry permits. What do lawmakers want to do when it comes to concealed carry permits in Utah?
They basically want to get rid of the need for them. So a proposal that had just passed through the Utah House this week without too much trouble would let anybody over the age of 21 who's a legal gun owner to basically carry a concealed firearm in public without a permit.
And I guess what's driving that that proposal? They don't want the need for a permit. It's too much red tape.
Yeah, exactly. The proponents of this basically say that there are no public safety advantages to requiring permits, that just because, you know, a gun is concealed underneath someone's jacket or hidden in some way, it doesn't really, you know, make the situation more or less safe. And this has been something that has popped up a few times in the legislature over the years, but it has added momentum this year just because of the change in governor's administration.
Right.
While Governor Gary Herbert, the former governor, he was opposed to this and vetoed a proposal like this. The new governor, Governor Spencer Cox, has expressed willingness to sign it.
And so, yeah, I mean, that's interesting history, the fact that there was a bill that made it all the way through the legislature that did just this, but was vetoed. Does that mean, I mean, Is this bound to make it all the way through the legislature? It's already passed the House, correct?
Yeah, it passed the House really easily. And so I think that, things look good for this bill to make it all the way through this session. And then it doesn't appear that there'll be any resistance from the governor either.
You reported that some Republican members of the House said that they were not in support of this, or was it maybe it was just one? Republican Representative Merrill Nelson thought that that this wasn't a good idea.
Yeah, well, so two Republicans voted against the bill in the House, and only one of them kind of spoke to that. And Representative Nelson basically said that this sort of legislation puts him in a really impossible position because he's pro-Second Amendment, he is extremely supportive of gun rights, and yet he doesn't think that this is, in the interest of public safety. His argument was basically, the opposite of what Representative Brooks is saying. He said that it does, make things less safe when you have a firearm that's concealed. He offered an example of someone walking into the Utah Capitol. If their, gun is out in the open, then, state troopers and everybody's kind of aware of the situation. If you see an agitated person come into a room with a gun and you can see the gun, then, that kind of changes everybody's mindset. If you don't know that they have a gun, then you might be caught off guard. So that was kind of his reason for opposing it.
All of the Democratic members of the Utah House, there are 17 of them. They all voted against this. Gun safety advocates have said that they spoke against this bill. Can you tell us what they said?
Yeah. So part of getting a concealed carry permit currently is that you have to undergo this training module. And the module basically talks about suicide prevention and safe storage of firearms. And the concern is just that if you don't require people to go through this process, then they're not exposed to that information. Firearms are a huge, a leading cause of death for children and teens in Utah. And gun suicides are also pretty high in the state. And, in the state's effort to reduce suicides, it's noted that, if firearms are among, the methods that are the most deadly, and that, if you can restrict people's access to firearms in the middle of a crisis, then there is a much greater chance that they'll survive.
Bethany, this is going to go to the Senate, and I'm assuming that given the fact that it passed before, that might happen again. It has to go to committee first, and there will be public comment on that. George Pyle, let's bring you in. What's, this is a measure that we've seen before, got vetoed, probably won't this time.
Yeah, Governor Herbert's argument for vetoing it was basically the "if it ain't broke, don't fix it" approach, and which the Tribune agreed with. It's not a horrible impediment to anybody's Second Amendment rights or rights of self-protection to go through a class, listen to these lessons. It's really not a high barrier. They don't even make you go to a range and prove that you can shoot what you're aiming at, which you would think would be part of a process like having to take a driver's test to get a driver's license. I think it's unfortunate that this is sailing through. I think it's unfortunate that this Second Amendment purism, which is basically a bunch of children who don't want to give up their toys. That's the problem with so much of life. Grown-ups who want to play with their toys, whether it's guns, ATVs, trucks that make lots of smoke. It's just grown-ups wanting to play with their toys. And whenever the state steps in and tries to be reasonable about it and tries to tell them it's time to put their toys away, they're dangerous, they throw a fit, and they hold their breath until they turn blue, and eventually the grown-ups relent and let them have their toys. This will make Utah less safe. I mean, anybody who says otherwise is just wrong. But they won't play with their toys, so we're going to let them.
Yeah, and then, George, just to use your phrase from before, they have kittens. Bethany Rogers, we have very little time before we turn to our final play, our final segment, the Underplayed Stories of the Week. There is another, you know, perennial topic at the legislature. This is a bill about abortion that you covered. This bill intends to require women who seek an abortion to go through certain processes. What are those?
So the state already has a lot of rules for what has to happen before a woman can get an abortion. And one of the requirements is that there's an informed consent process that 72 hours before an abortion, you know, the woman would have to watch this training module, this online educational module prepared by the Department of Health. So that's already a required step. They have to have a certificate at the end that they can show, and there's this 72-hour waiting period. So a bill brought forward now by Representative Chris Jansen would add to that module. It would require high-resolution ultrasound images from various stages in the pregnancy to be part of it. It would require fetal heartbeat sounds to be part of it, and it would also require medically accurate images of different procedures to be part of that. And then at the end of the module, the woman would have to sign a document attesting under penalty of perjury that she completed the whole thing. So those are all kind of new things, and it's sort of aimed at his concern that people aren't completing these modules, that the modules aren't informative enough, and that people are basically, you know, that there's a workaround where you can go directly to the certificate page without ever even having watched this module and just print off your certificate. So he wants to make sure that all of this additional information is included and that there's basically no way to avoid watching this. Another quick thing to add is that the informed consent process currently can happen over telehealth, and that's the way Planned Parenthood told me that they usually conduct these informed consent visits 72 hours before an abortion, especially during COVID. This would make it so that that would have to happen in person, face-to-face, and you know, in the physical presence of the provider. And they say that, you know, that could be another barrier for people who live far away from these providers, having to make multiple trips, and also potentially unsafe during a pandemic.
And abortion advocates say this is about lawmakers trying to chip away access to abortion. I mean, is that the stated aim, or is it what is the driving rationale behind running the bill?
Representative Chris Jansen's stated goal is to make sure that people have as much information as they can, as the state can provide before making, you know, a critical health decision. You know, speaking to some anti-abortion advocates, they also say that, you know, they've talked to women who regret their decision in the past and feel like they didn't have all of the available information. So they're just trying to prevent that from happening going forward.
George Pyle, I want to give you time, but we are really up against the clock. And so maybe just a quick comment, and then we'll head to our underplayed stories.
Now, this is another example of the legislature just not trusting women. It's just blatantly what it is. And it's too bad. It's disgusting. But we have men who want to play with guns, so they make guns legal, but we don't. But they never have abortions, so they're happy to regulate that.
All right. George Pyle is editorial page editor with the Salt Lake Tribune and a columnist. And we got to turn to our underplayed stories of the week. Lee Davidson, we have kept you quiet for quite a while. We'll go to you first. What's your pick for underplayed story of the week?
Well, I'm more eloquent when I'm quiet. And it's probably bad form to mention a story I wrote, but I'm going to anyway. We have a story up looking at how special interests provide $9 out of every $10 that Utah legislators raise for their campaigns. And it looks at what they might be buying with that kind of donations or not. Hmm. And it looks at who the top donors are by industry and company. And I recommend people take a look at it.
Check it out. A lot of data, a lot of great reporting from Lee Davidson, who's eloquent when he speaks as well. Bethany Rogers, your pick for underplayed story of the week.
This is another story up from The Hill. It's by Taylor Stevens. It's a bill that would require a biological father to pay half the out-of-pocket pregnancy costs for a woman who he's not married to.
All right. Story by Taylor Stevens from Bethany Rogers. George Pyle, your pick for underplayed story.
Well, just there's a lot of work by the Tribune News staff about what the coronavirus has done to schools and the legislature's interfering or guiding that, however you look at it. And a story, particularly this morning, by Julie Jagg about how families have made even more use of Utah's rather liberal school choice law, where you can go to a different district, a different school, anybody who has room for you, and how that's really kind of put a strain on a lot of different schools, those who have lost population and those who have gained it.
All right, George Pyle's pick. I, for my part, I'm going to go with a story from last night by Tribune reporter Sarah Tabin that reports that freshman Utah Congressman Burgess Owens apologized to the Utah House Democratic Caucus on Thursday for lumping liberals in with Marxists and socialists and saying that he didn't quite see the difference between liberalism and Marxism before now, and he apologized. Check that out. There's more to that story at sltrib.com. However, we are out of time. Lee Davidson, Bethany Rogers, and George Pyle, all from the Salt Lake Tribune, thanks for joining me.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And Behind the Headlines is a co-production of KCPW and the Salt Lake Tribune. You can find podcasts at kcpw.org or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Roger McDonough. Thanks for tuning in. Join us again next week.